If you would, please, just go ahead and open back to the prophetic book of Hosea. We got started on this last session, but there's something right at the tail end of this first chapter that I want to spend a little bit more time on. And to do it well, let's just begin from the very beginning of the book. The word of He who is that came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So that's a whole series of kings. And so we know that Hosea begins his prophetic ministry under Uzziah, but he's still doing it under Hezekiah, the great-grandson of Uzziah. But then we have this bonus information that really helps a lot. And in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. Now, it doesn't talk about any of the other kings in the series of northern Israel, but it does give us this guy that we know was contemporary with Uzziah. So this marks the beginning of Hosea's ministry underneath the reign of Jeroboam II and Uzziah or Azariah of southern Judah. So I would put the very beginning of the Hosea story in the 750s BC. Verse 2. When He who is first spoke through Hosea, He who is said to Hosea, go take to yourself a wife of whoredom, that is a woman who plays around, and have children of whoredom, for the land commits great whoredom by forsaking He who is. So God asks some of His prophets to do very strange things. And of course, God knows the temperament of the prophets, so He would never ask them to do something that they couldn't work their way through. So He taps Hosea to marry a young woman, perhaps whom Hosea grew up with. Perhaps Hosea might even liked. But she really wasn't considered as a marriage partner because she was loose. She was kind of wild. But God says, go ahead and marry her. Because you and she and the children that are going to come into the world through her are going to become illustrations, prophetic illustrations for the message you are going to pass on. Because Israel, particularly northern Israel, is playing around on me, even though I love them dearly and want them to change. So that's the emphasis of Hosea's relationship with Gomer. He said he likes her, he loves her, he wants her to be faithful, but she isn't. And that's exactly how the Lord feels at this moment in northern Israeli history. Verse 3. So he went and he took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim. So goes out, he does the offer of the dowry, and it's accepted, and they get married. And then we're told she conceived and bore him a son. So here comes the first baby of their relationship. Is it his son? Hopefully, but there's no guarantee of that. He who is said to him, call his name Yezreel. Now, Yezreel is the name of the city in the Jezreel Valley where King Ahab and Queen Jezebel were on a regular basis. We've had other kings go there as well. So it seems to be a favorite palace city away from the capital city of Samaria. So name him the same name as this city in the plain of Jezreel. For in just a little while, I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel. Now, the blood of Jezreel is the execution of the kings of northern Israel and southern Judah together by Jehu when he seized power. Now, granted, God tapped Jehu to do that. But Jehu's dynasty over time has gotten out of hand, and they have done even more harm. And so Jehu had been promised that his dynasty would last through four generations. And so God is letting Hosea know that dynasty is going to end as you're raising your boy Jezreel. So I'm going to put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. And on that day, I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. So there's going to be something significant militarily that's going to happen in the valley of Jezreel. And so that's why the first boy is named Jezreel. So then, you know, a couple of years later, she conceived again, bore a daughter this time. And he who is said to Hosea, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, which means in simple English, no mercy, no concern. For I will no more have mercy on the house of Israel to forgive them at all. So God is telegraphing through Hosea, I am done. My patience is at an end. The judgment rightfully intended for northern Israel's sins is going to fall. Now, there is an interesting addendum to this information. Verse 7, but I will have mercy on the house of Judah, and I will save them by he who is their God. I will not save them by bow or sword or war or by horses or by horsemen. We know that the agent that God is going to be using for the judgment against northern Israel is the Neo-Assyrian Empire. That was made very clear in the prophetic book of Amos that we just finished. The Assyrians are also going to threaten southern Judah, but God is not going to allow them to roll over southern Judah like he's going to allow them to roll over northern Israel. So God prophesies here that even though Lo Ruhamah, no mercy for northern Israel, Ruhamah, mercy for southern Judah. Verse number 8. Now when she had weaned Lo Ruhamah, no mercy, which that's a couple of years, she conceived and bore a son. So you see, we're moving through this time of having kids. Now, Hosea's apparently doing some sort of prophetic work at the same time, but we don't have the details about it. But he's being given the groundwork for a lot of the stuff that comes up later with the naming of these kids. So this time, he who is said, call his name Lo-Ami, which means not my people. For you are not my people, and I am not your God. So again, a prophetic naming to show God's relationship with northern Israel and its people. Even though God is married to northern Israel is cheating on him, and all of the kids, that's the people of northern Israel, they're illegitimate. And they are facing judgment. Verse 10. Now, this is where we closed off last time, and I wanted to come back to it. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. That is a promise, a prophecy, going way back to the time of Abraham, that his seed would be innumerable, that there'd be so many of him, you wouldn't want to try to sit down and count them. They're like the sand on the seashore. They're like the stars in the sky. And so God says, even though I'm bringing judgment against northern Israel, that doesn't mean I am giving up on my promise to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They will come back from this. Listen to these words. And in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, lo ami, it shall be said to them, children of the living God. So this hints very strongly at a future revival, that there will be a remnant that will return. And part of this remnant will be back into right relationship with God. Verse 11, and the children of Judah, so the Israelis down in the south kingdom, and the children of Israel, that's those up in the northern kingdom, shall be gathered together. So they're going to become one. We will actually see this imagery used in other prophetic sightings, where even though they are currently two different countries, there is coming a time in the future where that breach will be repaired, where they will be part of the same people group again, the same country, and more. They shall appoint for themselves one head. I am convinced, as others are, that that is a messianic passage, that this is a reference to the coming of the one king. And of course, that one king, when we get to the New Testament, is Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. And he is going to repair relationships across the board through his death, his resurrection, the impartation of his Holy Spirit, because sin is the problem. Sin leads to rebellion. Sin leads to separation. And so having those sins repented of and forgiven brings back relationship. And so Jesus is the solution. He who is salvation. Remember, that's what Jesus' name actually means in Hebrew. And then we get back to the name Jezreel. Remember, the name of the city, the name of the valley, the name of the eldest son of Hosea and Gomer. They shall go up from the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Now, I mentioned last time, and I wanted to come back and emphasize it now, the literal meaning of the name Jezreel is God sows. Now, that's probably the reason for the region getting the name, the valley where God sows, because it was the breadbasket of the north in the Promised Land. Lots and lots and lots of grain fields. And then the city, of course, that grew up in the midst of that gets the same name. But remember, we're in the context of salvation from the coming one king, the one leader, who is going to give his life as an atonement for sin, and he's going to repair all the relationships and bring the Israeli people back together again, and then they're going to go up from the land. I believe that that is a coded way of talking about the resurrection that's coming when Jesus Christ splits the skies. When the last trumpet is sound, and the dead will rise first, the living will be transformed, and we'll be caught up together to meet who? The Lord in the air, and we will always be with him. And who is going to be caught up in that resurrection? Everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord. And it won't matter whether they are from northern Israel, southern Judah, Russia, Uzbekistan, Australia, New Zealand, whether they even live in the Arctic or the Antarctic. Their ethnicity won't matter anymore. If they belong to Christ, they shall be resurrected and caught up to meet him in the Lord in the air. Why? Because God sowed into them the seed of salvation, and it bore fruit. And so please, please, please mark this in your mind as a very important prediction of the coming restoration of all things, not just simply for the Israelis, although that's important since we're looking at an Israeli book here, but for everybody. Now, we're going to do something here that I know might frustrate a few of you, but be patient. We need to let Hosea and Gomer's kids grow up, because the rest of the book takes place once they are adults. So if, as we suspect, this story started in the 750s BC, it's not going to be until probably the 730s and after before we can come back and see how the rest of the book plays out. So that's what we're going to do, is we're going to hold on to that. Now, before we do it, I want to show you how the passage we just finished is used in the New Testament, because I think it's intriguing and instructive. Hosea chapter 1 verses, well, all of these verses here at the end of the chapter, are mentioned by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 9, where he is dealing with people that think that maybe God is done with the ethnic Jewish people. And his argument is, no, God is not. Yes, he was judging them, and he will be judging them again because of their rejection of the Messiah, or at least how many of them rejected the Messiah. But God's patience is working to a bigger impact. So I'm going to pick up in the context of Romans chapter 9 at verse 22. What if God, desiring to show his wrath, that is his judgment, and to make known his power, has endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? So what if God has put up with people under his judgment because of their sinful attitudes, so that he can bring about even bigger things? Verse 23, in order to make known the riches of his glory for vessels of mercy, which he has prepared beforehand for glory, even us whom he has called. So Paul says, what if God has been putting up with all of this craziness amongst the ethnic Israeli people, rejecting the prophecies of Jesus being the Messiah, so that he could, through the death and the resurrection, the ascension of Jesus, save a whole bunch of us, both Jews and Gentiles? Because he says, even us whom he has called, not from the Jews only, but also from the Gentiles. As indeed he says in Hosea, those who were not my people, that is, because of their sinful attitudes, they're playing around on God, those who were lo ami, not my people, I will call my people. And her who was not beloved, or lo ruhama, I will call beloved, the one on which I have mercy, the one I care about. And in the very place where it was once said to them, you are not my people. And the reason for that was because of their sinful attitudes. They will now be called sons of the living God. So there we have the quotation. It's from the Greek version of the Old Testament. You can tell that in reading this in Romans chapter 9 in the original language. But it's all there that Paul says God has put up patiently with people rejecting his plan, rejecting his Messiah, because eventually He wanted to redeem as many people as possible from all ethnic groups, regardless of their original relationship with him, because he wants them to be the sons of the living God. Now, the other place where Hosea is alluded to is in the writing of another apostle, Peter, in his first letter to the people, the believers in Jesus that were scattered all through the western end of what we call Turkey today, a place where he'd been ministering evidently before he came to Rome and wrote this letter. And he talks about how the stone which the builders rejected has now become the cornerstone, the stone of stumbling, it's a rock of offense. But then he says in verse 8 at the end, he says, they stumble because they disobey the word as they were destined to do, not being forced into this rejection, but being understood that this was where they're going to be. And what does God do with that? He uses it. He uses the rejection of Jesus that he knew was coming by the Jewish nation, the Jewish leadership, to make a means of salvation. And then he says this, verse 9, but you, and remember who he's talking to. He's talking to a mixed ethnic group of believers in Jesus. You are a chosen race. That's it's genos. It's the idea again of an ethnic group, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession. And this is all hinting from the book of Deuteronomy. This is the speech that God gave through Moses to the people of Israel when they were first brought out of Egypt and being ready to go into the promised land. God selected you to be his special possession, his segula, his treasured people, to be a connection with the people of the world to bring them to him as well. That was the original intention of God for the ethnic Israelis, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So the ethnic Israelis going into the promised land were given the chance to be God's bridge of salvation to the people of the world. Sometimes they did it okay, other times they blew it. Most of the time they blew it. But God didn't give up. When he brought his plan of fruition to fruition with the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, with the birth of the pan-ethnic church, meaning it's a church for all ethnic groups, he again tells them, you're my chosen race, you're my royal priesthood, you're my holy nation, you're my segula, you're my special possession, and I need you to proclaim the excellencies of him, God, who called you out of the darkness of sin into the marvelous light of Jesus Christ. And then comes the allusion to our Hosea passage. Once you were not a people. See, once you were on the outs with God. It doesn't matter whether you're a Jewish or Gentile. You, because of your sin, were out of relationship. So once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, that's lo ruamah, but now you have received mercy. So that's where we're at as Christians. We are in the fulfillment of the prophecies of Hosea chapter 1. All we're waiting for now is for the one head to call us up from the land, because he sowed us to be resurrected in his image and likeness and to spend eternity in his eternal kingdom. And so that's what we're waiting for now. Let's finish with the First Peter passage, since we just happen to be there. as an encouragement to all of us living in the New Covenant era. Beloved, remember this is Peter talking, beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles. Now, he's not talking about them being sojourners and exiles where they live. He's talking about you guys are citizens of heaven stuck here in the fallen world for a bit. But don't let that get you down. I want you to abstain from the passions of the flesh with which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable. Now, Gentiles were sometimes used amongst the Jewish people as a synonym for sinner. And it seems as if maybe in the early church era, that's how it kind of got used as well, as a synonym for sinners. So he's speaking to saved people from both the Jewish ethnic background and the Gentile ethnic background. Keep your conduct among the sinners of this world honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Now, that day of visitation is clearly the second coming of Jesus Christ, the day in which we shall go up from the land because we've been sowed by God. And so Peter says, you just need to hang in there, live the godly life, bear the fruit of the Spirit, and as Jesus said, let your light so shine among the people of this world that they may see your good deeds, your good works, and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So I love that being kind of where we're going to close up today, is that Hosea's first chapter is used so well in the New Testament by two apostles to show that all of us, regardless of our ethnicity, are part of a group that's waiting for the coming of our King to resurrect us and bring us into His eternal presence with as many people as we can possibly take with us.